And welcome, friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. I'm a homeschool father of five, and we have an important program for you this day. In fact, this may be one of the most important moments at which the sons of Issachar are going to understand the times and know what to do. Man, we are in the midst of a massive economic threat, not just to affect America and the Western world, but every country in the world today. Listen, folks, worldwide economies are extremely unstable today. And let me be very clear. There are multiple destabilizing factors that simply make our economies non-sustainable. That's just the way it works. We've already gone over these things many times over the last 15 years of this broadcast. And let me be clear, the current economic situation is not sustainable. The debt-to-GDP ratios, the zero-interest prime rate, the Wilshire 5000 to GDP, now at what, 1.81, three times what it was in the 1990s, and about double what it was in 2007, right before the previous worldwide recession. It's double. If the 2000.com crash, if the 2008 recession was a tiny hill, we are now meeting our Mount Everest with the Wilshire 5000 to GDP ratio. Man, it is at 1.81, almost double what it was in 2007. And if you don't know what we're talking about, friends, you probably need to do a little more research, and we try to update you on these things on the Worldview in 5 minutes on a weekly basis. So hopefully there are those who make things happen. There are those who watch things happen, and there are those who wonder what happened. And we don't want our listening audience to be a part of that third group. We need to understand the times. We need to see the instability of the systems that are facing us in the present day. We are bound for a realignment, a readjustment. I just met together with the pastors in the local city here over the last hour or two, and we touched on some of the challenges that will face our state and our nation and the Western world over the next, say, 10 to 15 years. And we are facing a realignment, an economic readjustment that may take between 10 and 20 years to work its way out. It's going to be a hard boot, my friends. What it's looking like is a hard boot. You know what a hard boot restart looks like on a computer, and we're not talking about a Mac. We're not talking about just flip it on, it's going to turn on, and everything is going to be fine within a year or two or four or five. No, the Piper has invoiced, and our entire socioeconomic system is under stress, unlike anything we have faced in the modern world at any point in time since the fall of the Roman Empire. Friends, we're looking at the fall of the Western world, and I have just completed a book called The Rise and Fall of the West. It is entitled Epic, and that book could come out within the next 6 weeks or so. But friends, I think you need to understand the Piper has invoiced, and it's time to pay the piper. You can't not destroy your social systems. You can't destroy your entire family structure in the Western world. You cannot destroy the entire economy, driving the debt to GDP ratio to four times what it was in 1980, and not expect that the piper will invoice at some time. The piper has invoiced, and it's time to pay the piper. Now, there is a little hope left for the Western world and the Western economy. There's still a fragment of hope left for human civilization. There are some stabilizing factors still available. And, of course, we summarize these things in Family Life, a book available at our website, generations.org. But part of our vision for the future and the restoration of the biblical economy and the biblical family is to bring back the family economy. And, of course, we have been working hard on this for about 10 years with Family Economics Conferences. We have our CDs and MP3s we sell with multiple presentations on family economy. We've been doing that for something like 10 to 12 years as a ministry. But family economy was a tough sale. It was kind of like trying to sell sunscreen to Eskimos, and we were not all that effective at it. But the family economy was active for 5,900 years of world history until the experts showed up, and then we get whatever we have right now. Generations have been promoting this hopeful system through conferences and through resources for 9 to 12 years. We have been successful with the vision, I would say with 300-400 families around the world today. So we're just planting seeds here. That's what we've been doing for 12 to 15 years as a ministry, just trying to get a few hundred families interested in the what we call the oikonomia. This is where the heart of her husband safely trusts in her because he shall have no need to spoil. It's Proverbs 31. It's effectively the economic system that's presented in the Word of God, where David was feeding his father's sheep, Rebekah was feeding her father's sheep, and so was Rachel feeding her father's sheep. Aquila and Priscilla, they were tent makers. So this kind of concept of the family economy versus the fragmented, individuated economy of the modern world has something that's been going on for 5,900 years of world history until the experts showed up. And now we have, well, whatever this thing is. So, friends, we want to restore the concept of the family. The family, yes, the family. It was God's idea. It was formed in the Garden of Eden so many years ago. It was a good idea. It was a good concept. Yeah, I realize it's largely gone because of the educational and economic institutions that have completely undermined the family as a social unit and the family economy. Yeah, that's all gone. I realize that. But, hey, you can't destroy a civilization and then have one. No, you have to rebuild a civilization. That's what we're talking about on this edition of the Generations Broadcast. Rory Groves is my guest on this edition of the program. I'm so thankful he's come out with a book. It's one of the first, one of the most unique, one of the most important books issued at one of the most important times in all of human history. The book is called Durable Trades, Family-Centered Economies That Have Stood the Test of Time. And Rory Groves is now my guest on the program. Hey, Rory, welcome. It's good to have you on Generations.
Thank you, Kevin. It's good to be here.
Wow. It couldn't have been a better timing for this book. Rory, I'm so happy. Now, you contacted us on the publication of this book, I'm going to say like 2, 3, 4 years ago, and we gave you all the kudos we could, but you finally brought this to press, and as I understand it, it's released. Is that correct?
Yep. It was published about 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Fantastic. The timing couldn't be better. You agree?
It's almost providential.
As everything is, right? But what a blessing that you've brought this book to the market, especially at this moment in which, well, you've heard me go over the stats over and over again, the debt to GDP, what, 4 times what it was in 1980, the Wilshire 5000 is out of control, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you know, what is going on? You talk about a destabilized economy. It is about as destabilized as the economy could possibly be at this point. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. You think you see things as bad as they can get, and then you look a couple months later, and it's trillions of dollars more in debt.
Yeah, it's just not getting any better. And you look at what's going on with the COVID-19 catalyst, and the COVID-19 thing really brought to the surface what was really happening with the worldwide economy. It's just not in a healthy condition.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I think that there were many underlying problems prior to COVID, and it just forced to the surface a lot of issues that we were able to gloss over and kind of kick the can down the road, so to speak. But I think that it has really forced the issue in a lot of economies around the world today.
What do you think makes the present economy so destabilized?
Oh, well, where to start?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a number of factors that I go into in the book. Cracks in the foundation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that there's things like debt. I think that there's things like over-specialization,
mm-hmm.
Where people have specialized in fields of knowledge to a degree where they lack the basic understanding that most previous generations have had. In other words, they can't fall back on subsistence agriculture anymore. We've sort of disconnected that and put it into machines and robots and other methods of organization. And so we've built our towers so high, as Francis Schaeffer says, that men always build their towers so high they fall down.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of particular reasons that I go into in the book that we are in an unstable time. But it's also just something to realize that empires don't last forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rome fell, all of the previous empires prior to the American Empire and the American Republic, they ended. In the Lord's sovereignty, he had a purpose for each empire. And all of them tend to follow a similar trajectory. where they get too top-heavy over time, and they just can no longer support the weight.
If you dig down into the foundations and you say, okay, what is a foundation for an economy or for a socioeconomic system or a civilization, and you just dig down into the foundations, eventually you're going to end up with character, right? With hard work, with a epistemological confidence in some particular truth basis. You're going to find a teleology. You're going to find people who are motivated with a purpose to continue to build economies or empires or what have you. You're going to have hope. You're going to have character. You're going to have hard work. You're going to have respect for authority. You're going to have a family structure. Okay, so it seems to me that what makes society durable, what makes a foundation solid and stable for a civilization, it's got to be character. Doesn't it have to be the character of the people? Doesn't it have to be the solidity or the solidarity of the family structure? You know, you can't, in other words, here's my point. You can't separate socio from economic. Socioeconomic is socioeconomic. So you destroy
absolutely
the character of a people, you will destroy the economy of the people. And is it possible that we developed an economy that was self-destructive? An economy that worked very hard at fragmenting the family and destroying the character of the young men in that society?
Well, I think absolutely. You look at all of the prosperity that we look around us and we see, and it's hard to imagine that we could actually be on the brink of a collapse or
yeah,
even experiencing something, you know, as dramatic as we're experiencing with COVID-19. But the fact of the matter is that the prosperity and all the material blessings, they're really built upon a social contracts and social institutions that are totally decimated. You have things like marriage and birth rates and, like you said, morality and all these other factors, employment and small business versus large business and working from home versus separating out into factories and different things like that. There are so many factors that we have totally decimated in our pursuit of wealth that we kind of, it's almost like the Wile E. Coyote standing off the cliff where he's already left the edge of the cliff, but there's nothing supporting him anymore. And that tends to happen. You see these excesses towards the end of empires. If you look, they typically wind or collapse in a fairly dramatic way in the sense that they don't wind down as slowly as they wound up. They tend to follow a trajectory of complexity where they get to a certain point and they just can no longer sustain the complexity. And then the collapse is generally rapid. Now, I'm not talking about overnight. You know, it took a couple generations for Rome to really go away. But what you tend to see is a very rapid decline because they can no longer support that complexity.
One of the questions you grapple with in your book, Durable Trades, is the question of real wealth and how it's measured. Is it just by per capita income, or do you have to take into consideration debt to income ratios? Do you have to take into consideration a standard of living, the enjoyment of living, the enjoyment of relationships? In other words, is real wealth measured in per capita income or by something else?
Yeah, that's a really good point, and that's something I try to bring to the surface, is we tend to measure things like retirement accounts and stock market indices as a metric for prosperity and wealth in modern nations, and certainly they are far beyond any other previous generation what they have experienced. But what is it for? You know, what is the money for? What are the jobs for? Is it just to have dollars and cents in our bank accounts or stuff in our houses? Or do things like relationships matter? Do things like rearing children and building good citizens or training them up to be good citizens and leaders in our churches and in our communities, passing on the faith, do those things really matter? Even connectedness with the land. These are things that our ancestors, they understood and they lived out in their everyday, and they did so, and this is really my primary thesis, is they did so by working together. Mm-hmm. It was the family economy that integrated all of these disparate relationships into one unifying purpose and common call. And you didn't really see things like the dad's going off to one job and the mom going off to another job and the kids going to public school. those things just didn't exist more than 150 to 200 years ago. You know, when the country was founded, families by and large worked together, and that's who really built this country in most of the West. It was families working together.
Is there something else the Industrial Revolution could have done? What could the corporations have done besides putting daycare centers next to the workplace for moms that were leaving their kids in the latchkey condition? It seems that modern industry has destroyed the social fabric of the nation and did nothing to replace that social fabric. And so I guess it was a one and done kind of an industrial experiment. You know, one generation and then the whole thing's over. No more civilization after that. Was the intent to be sure that it was not going to be a sustainable socioeconomic system? Was that the intent?
Boy, I don't know if I could say that it was malevolently intended, other than if there were some other forces at play.
Okay.
But it certainly was the end result. John Eichard is a speaker on sustainable capitalism or sustainable agriculture. And he speaks to this kind of issue, and he says, essentially, capitalism is a very efficient method of extraction of energy. In other words, it's going to go after the most efficient course possible to produce the result at the lowest possible
price. In
the short term. And this is what efficiency in and of itself is neither good nor bad. It depends on what the cost of that efficiency is. Mm-hmm. And if it's coming at the cost of destroying families, I would beg to say it's probably not worth it. It's probably worth it to be less efficient and have stronger relationships with your sons and with your daughters and with your wives than it is to separate everyone into a different factory and monetize the labor of everybody.
So the Industrial Revolution kicks off in, I'm going to say, like 1790. It goes on into the 1970s. Now, let's talk about since 1970. Have things gotten better or worse since 1970s in terms of isolation, divorce, kids born out of wedlock, fatherlessness, motherlessness, latchkey kids, iPhone isolation, despair deaths, transgendered bathrooms in the K-6 schools? I'm answering the question for you, I think. But
yeah, I think you know the answer to the question.
Okay. Well, what's your take on that, though? Since 1970, did things fall off the cliff? Is that what happened?
You know, it's really remarkable to look at the last 60 years and just really scratch your head. But I think it was a culmination of trends that were happening, really led, spearheaded by the Industrial Revolution. If you think about, the Industrial Revolution kicking off about 230 years ago, it took several generations to really incorporate some of the ideology behind that, where just the kind of unbridled pursuit of wealth trumped all other courses. And so I think some of the things that you saw in the late 60s and 70s and some of this radical cultural changes and, I mean, complete implosions, demographically, it's staggering what has happened since the late 60s and early 70s. In terms of what you're saying, in terms of out-of-wedlock births, in terms of just the way that people went to work, in terms of the rise of abortion, all of these things were completely just blindsided if you look at it as from a sociological perspective. I just read a stat the other day. Pew Research reports that in 1960, 50% of mothers stayed at home and one with the father working full-time outside the home when they had children under the age of 18. And as of 2014, that number has dropped to 14%.
Wow.
And what I would say is that is the natural outworking of the Industrial Revolution, where it's claiming more and more of people's individual labor. So whether or not you have an ideological spin on whether mom should be working inside the home or outside the home, by the way, mom inside the home is working just as hard as anybody working outside the home. Yeah. It is a tremendous job to be a mom in today's culture and today's economy. So I applaud every mother out there who's choosing to take that task on for the family.
Rory Groves is the author of Durable Trades, Family-Centered Economies That Have Stood the Test of Time. He's my guest on this edition of the program. Now, we understand that the society around us has destroyed morality. It's undermined the family ethos. But here's the point. The point is that the economy itself is self-destructing. And I think people forget that this isn't just the destruction of morality. This is the destruction of an economy, an entire civilization. And this is what is happening right now in the Western world. And these systems are coming down. And then we have to rebuild something after that, just the way it works. Now we want to talk about the brittle systems. You say our systems today are brittle. Our economics are brittle. And they are. I think at every level. But here on the positive side of things, Rory, your book is about durability.
Okay, that's right.
Durable trades. So I want you to define durable. What are the factors which enable durability, economically speaking?
Well, if I could answer that, my experience and what led me to write the book is that I work as a software engineer. I own my own software business. I've been in that industry for many years. And one of the things about working in that industry is everything that you create goes obsolete in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And as a young man, that was not a problem. I was always ready to take a new challenge on. But as a father, now we have 5 children and, you know, a little bit older and hopefully have gained a little wisdom. I'm looking ahead at what am I going to leave for my children? And I just looked at the software side of things and I thought, you know what, this stuff is going to be obsolete before it's worth passing on, before it's time to pass it on. So that's really what led me to thinking about family economies. And I have to thank you, Kevin, and also like Mike Chaney, who wrote One with Everything. Some of the materials that came out of Generations are really what steered me in this direction.
Okay.
And that's what got me thinking about, well, what are the family economies that have survived? You know, you hear about things that have lasted for generations or passing on a family business for several generations. And I was just curious, well, what's out there? What's available to families today if they want to work together and build something that's going to last? And not just last for a couple of years or just until retirement, but I mean for generations.
Yeah.
Like, what can survive the onslaught of what's coming and what we're experiencing? And so what I did is, I can't make a prediction on that. I'm not omniscient, but what I can do is just look at history. And so what durable trades is it's basically an examination of 61 trades that have survived since before the Industrial Revolution, which is about the founding of our country, to today.
Mm-hmm.
This has basically survived all forms of economic upheaval. It's survived revolution, war. It's survived pandemics. All these different aspects, these are the most durable trades in history. And what I found was, in most cases, if they had existed 230 years ago, they had existed for several thousand years before that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. What are the signs of a durability? Obviously, historically survivable. That's obvious. What are the other factors or indicators of a durable trade?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. So what I did is I didn't just pick out these different trades, but I ranked them from top to bottom.
Okay.
And what I wanted to know is not just what's the most income a certain trade provides, but what's the most family-centered trade and what's the most historically stable trade. And so I came up with a list of about 25 criteria, and they include things like historical stability, you know, how much has that trade changed since its original inception? How resilient are they to like temporary shocks in the system? How do they do during recessions and depressions and upheavals like that? How resistant are they to automation, which is another key thing that we're having to speak of computer programming and software engineering? Robotic automation is a huge threat right now to a significant number of jobs. And I think a lot of people aren't going to be prepared for the loss of many of these white collar jobs that are being taken over by software. So I look at some of those things like income, barriers to entry, how much education is required, what kind of government regulations are involved. All of these things were taken into account and factored that into a score, an overall score.
Okay.
And then ranked each one.
You scored and ranked each of these durable trades.
That's right.
Okay. Can you give examples of some of your best? I mean, just say top 10, top 15 of the most durable trades in your survey.
Well, not surprisingly, and I go into this in some of the research of the book, but the top 20 trades are almost all having to do with food, fiber, and shelter.
Okay.
In other words, raising food, feeding, you know, serving the core needs of humans, providing clothing and shelter. So things like you would expect to be on there, like carpentry, farming, shepherding, a lot of the remodeling professions are on there. Innkeeper is one, tutor, someone who works with private instruction.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the ones that were a little more surprising that I didn't see coming were midwife, which is actually one of the fastest growing professions and a very lucrative one at that.
Right, right. We were active in putting together a Christian midwifery program, I'm going to say 6 or 7 or 8 years ago. That's still functional from what I understand.
Sawyers. There are a number of, there's a surging population right now of people getting portable lumber mills and sawing logs on site and people building with that. And you might look at some of these things and say, yeah, but those are low paying jobs. You know, they're actually not. A lot of the building trades are outperforming what you can earn as with a computer science degree. And so there's an incredible amount of demand for a lot of these jobs that involve physical labor. But then there's a lot of stuff in there, too. There's counselors and lawyers, gardeners, a number of different trades in there that you wouldn't necessarily expect to be durable or long-lasting, but they really have survived. And even if they tend to go out for a season, you see them come right back as soon as the need appears.
What about engineering or what about manufacturing? Is there any way to decentralize machining, injection molding, and other forms of manufacturing?
I think that, you know, there are some people looking at the democratization of some of these 3D printing capabilities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what that does in terms of being able to bring it back into the home.
Mm-hmm.
I would really encourage anything that would involve a home-based business or families being able to work together in the business. Because really, what you got to understand is that the family economy is instituted by God. And it's really through the family economy that you're going to receive the blessings that he intended through work. So any situation where you can bring people together around a common purpose and a common vision, whether it's manufacturing at home at small scale or setting up a little book distributor at home, but getting people together and being able to work together, you're going to have all kinds of the fruit of mentorship and apprenticeship that is sorely lacking in the corporate type of arrangement that we have today.
And one of the things that we encouraged in the family economics conferences over the years that we sponsored them, Rory, was that families not just see this as a single stream income source, but there are opportunities for family economies to engage themselves in, you know, ministry work, non-quid pro quo type of stuff, and just allow for the family economy to include multi-income streams where, you know, all right, so you don't get more than, you know, 1% of the family income on the lemonade stand, but, you know, you've got something else happening. You have a family that's using its talents in various ways, and even though dad may be still bringing home the 78% of the family income, there are other streams operating. And you also include some positive signs in your new book, some 4 million home gardens in America planted between 2007 and 2013. Farmers markets have increased in local villages, cities, towns around America, including Elizabeth, where we live. I think there were 1,800 farmers markets in 1994, now 8,000. And that's an increase of, I don't know, 80-90% in just the last 25, 30 years. So you see these things as positive signs, don't you?
I think that, yeah, Gene Logsdon calls it the unrevolution in progress. In other words, there is a pent-up demand to reverse some of the ill effects of the Industrial Revolution, and that's some of what we're seeing today. I've actually had, with the pandemic this year, I've had more people contact me about gardening. We live on a farm in southern Minnesota, and I've had more people contact me saying we're planting our first garden this year and wanting to get a few tips. So it's been great. I love it. I think there's a connectedness with the land, just like there's a connectedness with the family. God created this place for us to enjoy and to know him through it. And that's part of us. The more we become disconnected from God's creation and God's people, we're going to be missing out on the truths that God has for us.
You're looking at quality of life that needs to improve something beyond the bottom line, the $86,000 dad gets from his information technology career downtown. You're looking at improving the quality of life by restructuring economies, aren't you?
Yeah, that's essentially what it is. I mean, you have to consciously prioritize family relationships above the salary.
That's right.
And I think that people are open to that message today. I think we've had a lot of good feedback already, and in the course of writing this book, talking especially to young men and younger families where they're not interested in climbing the corporate ladder or getting the CEO position at a small to medium-sized company. They really want to have something that makes a difference. They want to have meaningful work. They don't want to leave their families for 60 hours a week. They want to do something meaningful and long-lasting and have the experience. You know, after all, this is what we're alive for.
Friends, we're talking about improving the quality of life, but ultimately the kind of life that God wants us to live. And we need to be asking ourselves and praying through this as to what are the best choices that we make, what are the best prioritization of our times and resources in order to maximize opportunity for restoring relationship in the home, for being together in the home, opportunities for discipleship as you sit in the house, as you walk by the way, as you rise up, as you lie down. If you've got a completely family disintegrated situation, how in the world can we live the biblical lifestyle where we disciple our children as we sit in the house, as we walk by the way, as we rise up, as we lie down? We're simply asking the question today, have the traditions of men made the laws of God of none effect by a reprioritization of life and by a restructuring of the economy? Is there something that has happened that needs to be restructured? Are we going to have to live our lives in a different way in order to meet the will of God for family life in the 21st century? That's the question to ask. And I'd say pray through this one and get a copy of Rory Groves' new book, Durable Trades, Family-Centered Economies That Have Stood the Test of Time. Rory, thanks for putting the effort into this. I think this is one of the most important resources of our generation. So really encourage you in this, and I pray that God will bless your efforts.
Thank you, Kevin. And could I leave just a tip? If you come to the website, thegrovestead.com, that's our website, we have a discount codes where you can get the book direct from the publisher and save a little bit of money that way.
That's thegrovestead.com, friends, to check out the book, Durable Trades, Family-Centered Economies That Have Stood the Test of Time. Rory Groves, my guest on this edition of the Generations Broadcast. Thanks, Rory. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
And you have been listening to the Generations Radio Broadcast. If you'd like to interact with the radio program, email me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.